Welcome back to Journeys Through Pulmonary Fibrosis, a podcast series produced by Boehringer Ingelheim. I am Ilaria Galetti, Vice President of FESCA, the Federation of European Scleroderma Associations. I'm a patient myself. I have been coping with the disease systemic sclerosis for almost 30 years, and I was blessed in 2025 because I received a double lung transplant. In each episode of the series, we have a person living with the disease and that can share the experience of living with pulmonary fibrosis. Today, we'll be discussing systemic sclerosis or SSC, a rare and autoimmune condition, with a focus on the management of pulmonary fibrosis and the importance of an early diagnosis. Joining me today to explore this both from a personal and a clinical point of view, we have Ruth Ajay and Dr. Cosimo Bruni.
Hi, good morning, Ilaria. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. And I'm happy to be here to discuss my experience.
Thank you very much. Ruth, would you kind to introduce yourself, please?
Yes, so I am Ruth and I have been living with systemic sclerosis and interstitial lung disease for 10 years now. I had my diagnosis in 2016 and so far I'm lucky and happy to be alive.
And Dr. Cosimo, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Ilaria. Very happy to be here today. I am a rheumatologist. I trained in Italy back in the days in 2017, and after that I explored research in the field of systemic sclerosis and interstitial lung disease, and I'm currently a senior scientist at the Zurich University Hospital and University of Zurich in Switzerland.
Thank you, Dr. Bruni. Ruth, you said you have systemic sclerosis.
Yes.
Can you please briefly describe what it means living with the disease? What is the disease?
So for me, my understanding of the disease is that my skin and my body produces too much collagen and I have skin hardening. But it doesn't just affect my skin, it also affects my muscles, my joints, and also my internal organs as well. And living with systemic sclerosis has been quite challenging for me. Before my diagnosis, I've never heard of the term autoimmune condition. I think I've heard of the term lupus, but I didn't really know what it meant. So when my doctor told me that's what I had, my immediate thought was, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to die very soon. I don't want to die. But I did a lot of research and with the support of friends and family and my consultant, I've been coping quite well. I mean, I have good days and bad days, but I've been coping quite well.
Thank you, Ruth, for sharing with us with a smile. That's quite important and makes really the difference.
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Bruni, there are other signs or symptoms that are important to consider that Ruth has not mentioned.
Yeah, Ilaria, that's a very, very important question because systemic sclerosis is an extremely heterogeneous disease. Let's say it's a term, like an umbrella term, which includes inside very different ways the same disease can manifest. So lots of people have problems with their fingers, and this is related to bad circulation. It's a typical phenomenon called Raynaud phenomenon with discoloration of the fingers, changes in the way the feeling itself is, the way their color, their temperature, lots of bad feelings and tingling and numbing, which is affecting and complicating the life of many, many patients with systemic sclerosis. On top of that, gastrointestinal involvement is quite a challenge for many patients. There are as well good days and bad days as well. A lot of adjustments to be done in the diet, in eating times because of reflux, because of issues with constipation or diarrhea or bad digestion overall. And then, of course, there can be not that often other vascular severe complications like pulmonary hypertension or scleroderma renal crisis, which might be on top of the scleral part of the disease, meaning not just fibrosis, as Ruth told us, with the collagen itself, but also vascular complication and inflammatory complication, which affect the patients and may be a challenge also for us from a clinical perspective to handle.
Thank you, Dr. Bruni, for explaining these concepts in a very layman language. Thank you. You have well explained what consists systemic sclerosis. Are there other involvements that worthwhile mentioning?
On top of this, I would say that for sure, lung involvement overall is a major complication, or let's say manifestation of the disease, because it's a way, one of the way that the ways the disease can manifest. And among them, as I already mentioned before, pulmonary hypertension is rare, but can be present in this disease. So it's a vascular problem inside the lungs. Or we can have, let's say, the parallel component of the skin fibrosis happening in the lungs. And this is what we call interstitial lung disease. It's a wide bunch of conditions which can affect the lung. And among them, systemic sclerosis-associated interstitial lung disease is one of them. But again, inside this terminology, we have different ways the lungs can be affected from an inflammatory and a fibrotic component. So let's say touching the tissue of the lung, not the vessels of the lung. And these can bring to different symptoms, different complications for the patients. And on top of this, let's say different needs for the patient itself from a clinical perspective and a personal perspective.
So just to add to what you've said, when I got my diagnosis 10 years ago, I was initially told I had systemic sclerosis, Raynaud's, and interstitial lung disease. But approximately 4 years ago, I had the biggest flare that I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And from that, I developed pulmonary hypertension mm-hmm. and heart failure, but okay. with normal ejection fraction.
That's right.
And now I'm having issues with my liver. Mm-hmm. So the autoimmune is, I'm very aware, is attacking my internal organs. So my needs and the way it affects my body and my daily life has changed drastically.
Yeah.
And it can be quite difficult because I'm seeing different specialists. And when I'm feeling unwell, I have to kind of play a little bit of bingo in my head. Like, do I see the rheumatologist or the cardiologist or the pulmonary hypertension specialist today? Who do I go to first? And if I go to one person and they'll say, I think this is to do with your lungs. That's not my area. Go and see your pulmonary hypertension specialist. And then I have to go and book an appointment with them. So it, from a patient perspective of someone living with the condition, it can be quite challenging as well, because you're not viewed as a whole person. You're viewed as a specific condition and you have to go to that specialist. And if they can't help you, it's, oh, sorry, go to the next person. So you kind of go around the house sometimes.
Yeah. That's true. That's true, Ruth. We go back to the moment you received the diagnosis of ILD. How was the diagnosis delivered to you?
I'll never forget the day that I received my diagnosis. It had been a journey of 9 months. So the way I got sick, I had a cold. And normally when you catch a cold, for me, I feel really awful for 2 days or so. But after 2 days, I start to get better. But for me, it was 2 weeks and I was progressively getting worse. My breathing was getting worse. I was in a lot of pain. I was having jaw pain, muscle, joint ache. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know how to describe it. And I kept going to my GP until one day I said to my GP when I went and I said, I'm not living here until you give me a letter to go to the hospital, because I can feel myself dying, but I don't know what's wrong with me. But you keep telling me to give my body a chance to recover. And this was about 6-8 weeks down the line. And I was a big woman. I was a size 18 UK size. And within those 6 weeks, I lost weight to a size 10 without doing anything. So 9 months later, after seeing various specialists, having scans, blood tests, biopsy, I remember sitting in the office of my rheumatologist, who is still my rheumatologist now, and he gave me the diagnosis and I just cried. I cried, ugly cried as well. I was just relieved. But then I panicked because I thought, oh my God, what is this condition? Am I going to die? Do I need to tell my family what's going to happen to me? And a lot of medical terms were being thrown at me. And I kept saying to him, explain it to me in plain English. I don't understand what you're saying. Explain it to me in plain English. So he told me everything, the treatment pathway. I felt very overwhelmed. And I said, can I just go home and think about this? And he gave me lots of leaflets. And I remember when I came out of the office, I was walking down this long corridor and I saw some chairs and I sat down there and I cried nonstop for about 20 minutes. And then I took myself home, got on the bus, got home, and then I cried again. I did a lot of crying over the next few days before I decided to do my own research to find out what exactly is this disease and how is it going to affect my life. But it's a day that has stayed with me forever. I'll never forget that day and the emotions that I was going through.
Thank you so much, Ruth. It is clear for us and for our listeners, I guess, that you are a rock, really. Thank you.
I had no option but to be a rock.
But yeah, you find the right way to cope with it.
Absolutely. Ilaria, can I ask you, can you tell me what is your scleroderma journey? How did you come to being diagnosed and how are you coping with living with this condition?
Thank you for the question, Ruth. I remember I was about 23 years old, 22. I was studying at university in spring outside and I saw my hands becoming blue. And I said, what's happening? That's very, very strange. But I went immediately to the doctor who referred me to a specialist. And in just 2 months, I received the diagnosis. So I didn't live the odyssey of many other people that have to wait 5-6 years because of reaching a diagnosis. Then after 6 months, when I was walking in the mountains with my husband, I noticed that I was breathless. And I said, okay, I'm a lazy person, but not as much to justify this breathlessness. And the CT revealed a lung fibrosis that worsened through the years despite the therapies. And last year we had to find 2 new lungs to replace the old ones that was not working. So it's a journey, a lucky journey in my opinion, because I really received a very, very early diagnosis of systemic sclerosis, an early diagnosis of lung fibrosis. And this allowed me to be here today. So I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you so much for sharing. That really resonates with me. And I'm so happy that you had the support to be able to cope and to live with this. So thank you for sharing.
And now I have a crucial question. Why didn't I lose weight? Dr. Bruno.
That's a very important question, Ilaria, because the disease itself starts very differently for every patient. This means that if I think about the time I was in medical school and I was taught in the rheumatology classes, systemic sclerosis starts with Raynaud's phenomenon. Raynaud's phenomenon will be the first sign of the disease in 99% of the patients. So this is where we have to act because this is the way the disease starts for most of the cases. Then you move on with your studies, you start seeing patients, you start practicing as a rheumatologist, and actually you see that this is not the case every time. You might be having hard days like Ruth had because of your lungs at the same time, might be joints aching, might be the skin starting to get harder or swollen up in your fingers, with or without the Raynaud's, regardless of the Raynaud's, 2 years after your Raynaud's, 20 years after your Raynaud's, or without Raynaud's at all. So the disease can manifest very differently in different patients. There can be different timelines for different patients, meaning someone might take weeks before the full-blown-up disease shows up. Some might take months and other years. And this is why it's very important that especially non-specialist doctors, like family doctors, have this hint in their way of judging patients and seeing, okay, this might be something beyond my knowledge. This might be something where a specialist is actually required. And then it comes the question, which would be the right specialist? And this is actually why it's then very important that rheumatology is seen as a full body, comprehensive and caretaking specialty in the field of medicine. Because once you are a rheumatologist, it's very important that you are aware of all the organs and the different symptoms your patient might have. Because we do not talk about, or we should not talk about, systemic sclerosis and ILD and joints and muscles as if they were different components affecting the same patients. This is the same disease. This is the way I should be taking care of my patients, looking at the joints, at the lung, at the GI, at the vessels, at everything else. So every patient can manifest differently. Every patient has to be approached in a similar way in order to get to the same diagnosis, but personalized according to their complaints. And this is why maybe Ruth lost weight, other patient didn't. Other patient lost weight later on during their disease course, other gained. So this is why we have to be aware of the heterogeneity of the disease, the way it behaves later on after the diagnosis, but also the way it behaved before the diagnosis was assigned to the patient.
So one of the warning signs for me when I'm in a flare is weight loss, especially if I'm not trying to lose weight, then I know something is seriously wrong. I need to go and see my rheumatologist and get some tests done so that they can know what's going on, and rather than waiting for me to get really, really bad and then I end up in emergency. But I'm more proactive because I've been living with the condition for a while. So for me, weight loss is an indication mm-hmm. that I'm about to go into a big flare and yeah. I need to handle it very well.
I agree, because I remember when I was waiting for the lung transplant, I lost 20 kilos. So it was a sign of not good.
Yeah.
It was a bad sign.
Yeah.
Dr. Bruni, nowadays we spoke more and more about VDOS, a very early diagnosis of systemic sclerosis. Why is it important to have an early diagnosis?
So thank you, Ilaria. That's a very relevant point. The diagnosis of the disease sometimes comes very early, meaning few months or few weeks, even sometimes after the very big first manifestation or first symptoms of the disease itself, while sometimes it takes years before the condition and the overall body status gets a name. And this is very relevant because once systemic sclerosis is there present as a condition and has caused damage, it's very hard, almost impossible, to get the damage back. So to remove tissue which has been damaged by the disease at a skin level, at a joint level, at lung level. So the earlier we are able to detect the condition, the systemic sclerosis itself, the better, because at least we are able to start monitoring the patient and screening the patient for conditions which have not manifest yet or which are not even there on images. So we would be able to see the patient in his very baseline status when the things are as clean as possible. And that's the best starting point we can have. We do not have as of now many way of preventing the disease evolution, of avoiding the appearance of certain complications, let's say primary prevention, this is what it's called. But we do have the chance to act early on the conditions, on the different organs and the different manifestations the disease can present with our current medical weapons, let's say our medical possibilities. So the earlier we get the diagnosis, the earlier we can start monitoring, screening the patient and doing our regular checkups, the earlier we can start the treatment. And this allows at least avoiding or delaying the damage that the disease usually brings.
So why it is important to identify the progressive element of ILD rather than waiting for more significant elements?
Yeah, that's a very relevant, practice-relevant and very also patient-relevant question. Because we know overall that if you have certain complications or manifestations of the disease, as interstitial lung disease is, there is higher risk of having more complications later on in your life. And interstitial lung disease is typically one of those complications that tend to change over time and more frequently getting worse than getting better. We do have knowledge accumulated over time from other diseases having lung complications similar to the SSC-ILD, in which there is tendency to keep on losing the way the lung function and the way then, as a consequence, the patient functions in their daily life. We should be aware that as the status of medical possibility and medical care is today, once the scars in the lung, in the lungs are there, we do not have that many chance for the lung tissue itself to go back to the way it used to be. And that's the same when you do have a bad accident, for example, and that turns up with a big scar on your body. Yes, okay, we do have aesthetic surgery for that now. We do not have that in the lungs. So we cannot replace that little part of scarred lung unless you get a full lung transplantation. And we do not have the chance with our medications, the way we use them now and what we have available now, for the tissue to go back to normal. And especially if you tend to be a patient who worsens rapidly in a short period of time, usually in a year time or in a couple of years time, then your chance of having further worsening over time is even higher. And this further worsening has been associated in many conditions, as well as in systemic sclerosis, with higher mortality. So we do have to identify patients who have this called progressive phenotype, or the way the pulmonologists like to call them, progressive pulmonary fibrosis, because those are the patients who are at higher risk of having bad prognosis over time. So higher chance of dying or chance of dying earlier.
Ruth, when did you realize that something was not working with your lungs, and how the diagnosis has been told you?
So before I was diagnosed, I realized something was wrong with my body, but I didn't know it was with my lungs. So my house, my bedroom is close to my bathroom, and I've counted the steps. So from when I get up from the bed to my bathroom is 8 steps precisely. I've counted it so many times. And I realized something was wrong when I'm sitting at rest and I'm struggling to breathe and I'm in a lot of pain. Or I get up to go to the bathroom, 8 steps, and I'm struggling to breathe. And it's like if I've run a marathon and I'm thinking, this can't be right. I've not done anything. I've only taken 8 steps from my bed to the bathroom and I'm breathless. That was when I realized something is not right here. And then I went to my GP. And then 9 months later, when I got the diagnosis about interstitial lung disease, never heard of that term before. I was very, very scared because I couldn't walk at my normal pace by this time. So I had to pace myself when I'm walking. I live in a house, so I've got stairs. 13 steps, I counted, because I have to give myself a pep talk every time I have to go up the stairs and down the stairs because I get very breathless. That's when I realized this is a condition I'm going to live with for the rest of my life. I have good days and I have bad days. It's kind of stabilized now. I do have a scan every year, where my rheumatologist just monitors my lungs to make sure it's not getting worse. But whenever I have an infection or a cold or my body's highly inflamed, my breathing does get significantly worse. And not just worse, but every breath is painful as well, which can be quite depressing.
Thank you, Ruth. And the communication with the doctor when he told you you have ILD or you have pulmonary fibrosis, what was it?
So I received the pulmonary fibrosis diagnosis 4 years ago when I was in hospital. So I had a big flare, ended up in hospital. I thought I'd only stay for maybe a week, and I ended up staying for about 3 months. And it got to a point I actually didn't think I would come out alive because I was that bad. And when they told me about pulmonary hypertension, pulmonary fibrosis, to me, it was just a medical jargon. I was really weak, and I'm getting all this medical terminology. And I remember I was kept whispering, explain it to me in plain English. I don't know what that means. What exactly does it mean with my lungs? And there were talks about maybe having a transplant, but it was just overwhelming. Imagine you're sick, you're very weak, you're in hospital, you don't know if you're going to make it out alive. You've got doctors, different specialists coming to see you every few days. And every time they come, they're giving you medical jargon, not because they don't want you to understand, but that's just the way doctors speak. And you're trying to process it and understand what it means. And it can be quite frustrating, sorry. Mm-hmm, it can be quite frustrating as a patient because you want to understand so that you can make an informed decision mm-hmm. about whatever treatment options they offer you.
Absolutely important, the communication between doctor and the patient, because there must be an alliance to receive then the best treatment.
Yes.
Thank you, Ruth. You've been very generous in sharing your life, your difficulties, and your experience. Thank you. After receiving the diagnosis of ILD, how did you keep track of your symptoms?
That's a very good question. I'm ashamed to say I did not keep track. I think I was just so overwhelmed with so many things. I kept a mental track, but I didn't keep a diary. So whenever I went to see my consultant, I can easily recall and say, you know, I've noticed for the past 2 weeks or 3 months, I'm having these symptoms and my breathing is getting worse, etc. What would really help is if there is an app somewhere designed specifically for people with autoimmune condition, where you can just keep track of things, because it's just quite a lot. It's so many things going on in your body. And even though I've been living with this condition for 10 years, sometimes when I'm experiencing a symptom, I'm thinking, is this scleroderma or is this just me being old, getting older? So it can be a little bit tricky, but I have to say that I don't keep track, but I actually should start doing that. Maybe I should start keeping a symptom diary. I need a very big diary to do that. But yes, that's a very good suggestion and a good question.
So it seems that being a patient, it's a full day job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to keep on top of appointments because my condition is managed between four consultants and my GP. I feel like I'm a part-time medical secretary. So whenever I see one consultant, like copy me in the letter that you sent to my GP, and then I have to send it to all the other consultants, and I'm like, put it in my notes, please. Because when I see the consultant, they'll say, so what did your rheumatologist say when you see them? And if I saw them more than 4 weeks ago, I can't remember. So I have to say, right, can you bring up my record? There should be a letter in there because I emailed it to your medical secretary. So yes, it is a full-time job, but it's one that I realize that I have to do because it makes me empowered and also helps me to better advocate for myself and also to make sure that I do my best as a patient to keep myself for healthy and pain-free for as long as possible.
So due to this long experience of living with the condition and the difficulties you went through, what would you say or recommend yourself young?
Me now, I had to speak to my young self 10 years ago. One of the things I would say to myself is be kind to yourself. Give yourself grace and don't be a strong woman. When I was first diagnosed, I felt like if, you know, I'm going to beat this and I have to do this. And I have to say, scleroderma has whooped my ass so many times. And there were times that I gave up felt like giving up, but I've had to pick up myself. But I realized that I was so tough on myself. And it wasn't until last year, really, really recently, I just decided, you know what, Ruth, you don't have to be strong anymore. This is now your new normal, even though I don't like that term. This is the body I have now. This is the condition that I am going to live with all my life. So pace yourself. Take a rest when you need to take a rest. Be kind to yourself. Set your boundaries and stick to your boundaries. It's been really difficult on relationships. I'm really happy that I've got good friends and family around me, but it's been really difficult on some of my friendship. And my marriage did break down when I had my big flare up. But, you know, I would have to just say to myself, be kind to yourself. You have to, because nobody asks for this and it's unpredictable. You don't know what each day is going to be like. I can wake up tomorrow morning and not be able to get out of bed and be stuck in hospital for another 3 months. It's really unpredictable. It's out of my control, but I need to make sure that here, keep myself sane, keep myself calm, and just take it one day at a time.
Thank you once again. We have gone through the diagnosis, the first symptoms of pulmonary fibrosis and systemic sclerosis. We went through the difficulties of living and coping with the condition, the complexity of treating such a heterogeneous condition, as Dr. Bruni said. Is there, Dr. Bruni, anything you would like to add before we finish?
Well, as you mentioned before, Ilaria, it has to be an alliance, okay? Every time a new patient gets diagnosed, it's probably the beginning of a new life, of a different life of the patient, and it has to be the beginning of a new alliance for the doctor themselves. So, as Ruth was pointing out before, it's hard to keep tracks of what's happening, especially when you have multiple things to do. And again, being a patient is not a job. Maybe you have a job on top. Maybe you have a family on top. So that is like where you devote your free time. It's probably your new unwished hobby you have to take care of. And every time you see the patient as a doctor, what you can do, of course, is having a look at tests, monitoring how the disease has been changing or not changing since the previous appointment, how the lung is functioning, if the CT has changed. But there is no test who is going to really tell you how the patient is feeling, how the patient is functioning at home. So that's where the alliance comes. As a physician, educating the patient in reporting when something is happening, in reporting what could be the scleroderma and the ILD itself as a cause of the symptoms, what could not be. So playing the Sherlock Holmes of the situation in letting the patient understand, yes, that symptom could be your ILD getting worse, but maybe you got a cold. Maybe you have another condition ongoing at the same time. Because fortunately for the medical field, unfortunately for the patients, having scleroderma is not excluding you from getting other conditions, other diagnoses, other comorbidities. You are anyway getting older, luckily, from a certain perspective. So that's where asking the patients how they were feeling, how they were functioning at home, if there was really a change on that part, how coping with changes has become over time, how much need for adaptations there has been since previous years or the previous consultations. That's part of what we assess in PPF, in progressive pulmonary fibrosis, in change in symptoms. That has been a big, big change since, in comparison to 10 years ago, I would say, where there was a lot of attention and focus on how the lungs function, how pulmonary function tests, how the numbers are going, how the CT looks like, and not that much as it is now on how the patient is feeling and functioning. And going back to what Ruth said, I would like to say when she mentioned, okay, this is my new normal. I like to talk to my patient as your new normal is not surrendering to the disease, because surrendering and giving up is not going to be helpful for anybody. It's very hard to fight this devil. But adapting yourself doesn't mean surrendering to the devil. And this has to be part of the way and the motivation the patient might have themselves in taking care of the part-time job, doing the assessments, taking the medications, reporting to the physician when something is going wrong, and not being ashamed of reporting anything that is not going wrong. So waiting for the consultation, yes, being polite, essential, but whenever something is wrong, as Ruth said, don't wait for you to get into the emergency department.
Thank you for these inspiring words, Dr. Bruni. And Ruth, do you have any final remarks, mainly on what Dr. Bruni just said and what means living with constant breathlessness?
I'll first of all start with what you've said. I absolutely agree with every word. And it just made me realize that one of the things missing from my care that I've had to go get the support for myself is my mental health. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize the impact that this disease has had and is continuing to have on my mental health. And I refer myself to talking therapies every couple of years because my specialist, and they're great to have a lovely relationship with them, are just interested in the condition. But the impact on my life, nobody really discusses that. But the great thing is I've recently, well, not recently, a couple of years ago, found a support group. And for the first time, when I found that group, I felt like I am not alone. Mm-hmm. Because before finding the group, I'm the only person that I know that I have this condition. So I felt very, very much alone. And especially when I look okay, and people don't believe me when I say I am in a lot of pain. I live with pain every day. I am in pain right now. But as people who live with autoimmune condition, we mask a lot. We pretend we're okay. It's when we get home and we're in our own privacy, we can just like let go. So I absolutely relate to that. I think that mental health aspect and looking at the full picture mm-hmm. of somebody's life is really important. In terms of how ILD affects my life, I think I'll be lying if I say I still do not grieve my old self, because every morning when I wake up, I have to take my time to get out of bed because I'm breathless. Even when I wake up in the middle of the night and I have to turn from one side to the other, I'm breathless. And it does make me sad quite a lot, because I remember my old self when I didn't have to do that. Coming here today, I had to really pace myself, walking, getting to the venue, managing the breath that I was taking in, you know, my lung capacity. And it does make you think. So that's why I say I've learned to be kind to myself and to give myself grace. And no longer to feel ashamed, because before I used to be very, very ashamed, and I don't know why. But now when I'm walking with a friend and they're walking too fast, I don't try and keep up. I just walk at my own pace. And then they look back and they go, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I'm like, that's fine. But if you're going to walk with me, it's going to be a very, very slow walk. And I'm okay with that. And I don't apologize for that anymore, and I'm not ashamed about it anymore. And you know, I take all the help and the support available to me, and realize, as you said, you know, giving into the disease doesn't mean you're giving up, you're just adapting to it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Bruni, a professionist in caring and treating the disease, and to Ruth Ajay, a professionist in coping with the disease. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to Journeys Through Pulmonary Fibrosis, a podcast series produced by Boehringer Ingelheim. Don't forget to click on follow or subscribe and not miss our next episodes. Thank you for being with us today.